Order, order.
There was just one select committee meeting during this short adjournment. It began on Thursday morning in Wellington and continued in the afternoon in Christchurch. Arriving outside committee room number 2 in Bowen House at 8:45 a.m., Rich Lyon found himself amongst a crowd of grumpy mayors and local body politicians who'd come to the capital to deliver an earful to their counterparts in central government.
The Local Government and Environment Committee met at Parliament on Thursday morning before travelling to Christchurch in the afternoon for submissions on a bill that makes changes to the Local Government Act 2002. Appearing before the committee in Wellington and making a submission largely critical of the bill was Local Government New Zealand President Lawrence Yule.
Before commenting on the bill, though, I would like to acknowledge the presence of the significant numbers of mayors and chairs that are with me today for this submission. The Mayor of Wairoa, Central Hawke's Bay, Kapiti, South Wairarapa, Napier, Hutt City, Otago Regional Council just been before us, Horowhenua District Council, the Mayor of Tauranga, Clutha, two representatives from Palmerston North, and there will be other members of the Mayoral Forum, and I know there will be a lot of people when you go to Christchurch. That has not just happened. That has happened because our sector is grumpy, really grumpy, about parts of this bill. And we think they go against our constitutional rights and opportunities to act as local government. And in my submission, I'm going to talk about those. It's also fair to say that we have been disappointed in the way this bill has come to this point. Had the local government sector been consulted during the development of this bill, I believe we would be having a very different conversation than what we're having today. And would have been happy to focus on assisting the government to achieve their objectives. Now, I accept that the Minister of Local Government went around New Zealand and talked to a lot of councils. But what I do not accept was there was any great detail given as to what was going to be in the bill. So it is a long stretch to say we've been consulted and we've supported of many parts of it because we simply didn't know when that occurred. Local Government New Zealand supports the intent of the bill. We are committed to making better local services, and many of our members have made considerable progress towards the goal. Local Government New Zealand's own excellence program, which is virtually underway, provides an independent process for assessing that progress. Local Government New Zealand also supports ongoing efforts to make the sector and government more efficient. It's a task we all have in public office when we're using other people's money. With regard to the bill, though, I'd like to start by saying the proposed reorganisation provisions, with some exceptions, are an improvement on the existing rules that were introduced in 2012. We were highly critical of those rules then, so we do wish to acknowledge there's been some improvement in some parts. The Local Government Commission should always have the discretion to develop reorganisation proposals that are appropriate to the diverse circumstances of communities and regions, and the new provisions should allow this to occur. In other words, one size does not fit all. And even some of the examples we've seen, even in this with here in Wairarapa for instance, if there'd been more latitude, that may have got over the line as opposed to one size, which clearly doesn't fit all. Local Government New Zealand supports good evidence-based decision legislation designed to lift performance. Unfortunately, aspects of this bill have been rushed, the evidence base is not sound, and as a result, we worry that some of the measures, if not amended by the Select Committee, will undermine good local services. Our concerns are set out in detail in our submission and also the Society of Local Government Managers submission, which examines the technical aspects of the bill in substantial detail. There are three major issues I wish to traverse today. The first concerns the process for initiating a reorganisation investigation. The bill simplifies the process for initiating a reorganisation, even to the extent of enabling the Commission to undertake an investigation in response to an obviously frivolous submission. It also gives the Local Government Commission and the Minister of Local Government wide discretions to initiate reorganisation investigations. The constant risk of reorganisation has a cost in form of uncertainty, which can disincentivise long-term decision-making and undermine the capability. Local Government New Zealand is seeking a threshold such as demonstrable community support, which should be reached before an investigation can be instigated. Where an investigation has been undertaken, we would like to see a moratorium on further investigations for at least 2 terms, 6 years. The next substantive item relates to CCOs, and for us is the most controversial. As you've just heard in the previous 2 submissions ago, CCOs are widely used in our sector, where appropriate. So we're not against CCOs, but the ability of the Commission to establish CCOs without the agreement of affected councils and their communities is an anathema to us. We do not support it, and nor do we have we found any support around our sector for this position to be adopted. Local Government New Zealand is fundamentally opposed to the Local Government Commission's ability to establish substantive and multiply owned CCO organisations without the agreement of the affected councils or their communities. The proposal has the potential to affect not only the sustainability of many of the rural and provincial councils, but also to diminish the accountability of elected members. And I'll remind members in this committee, these are our assets, funded by our ratepayers, apart from the sharing with NZTA, actually they're for us to decide what structure they're put in, how we can best run them, and how most efficiently they should be run. Local Government New Zealand is looking for a change in the bill, which would mean there is a requirement that if CCOs are to be established and supported by the Local Government Commission, then all of the affected councils must give their agreement. We're not supportive of majority approaches. It has to be unanimous. And this government for some time has looked at CCOs, has looked at structures of councils. But I don't believe yet it's looked at how it might facilitate this. Whenever we've suggested incentivisation, ways of assisting things at looking at something else, no money ever flows, you go to a regulatory approach to say, actually, how could this be done, and we're going to put a piece of law or a commission to do it. In my humble view, that is completely the wrong approach. Our third concern is the proposal to give the Secretary of Local Government the authority to set performance measures. Bearing in mind, these are our functions. These are things our ratepayers want and we fund. Clause 33 to give the Secretary of Local Government the power to specify performance measures for council activities by extending the existing provision introduced in 2012 that enables measures for major infrastructure investment activities to be prescribed. In other words, there is an ability for the Secretary of Local Government to specify performance measures on a whole range of other things that they never did before. And I can understand maybe in the national interest, why you would want to know about transport infrastructure performance, maybe even water performance. Why do you need to know about how libraries might operate or how sports fields might operate is beside me. This proposal is of concern not just because it undermines the role of elected members to set levels of service and consultation with their own communities, but because it's simply not practical or meaningful, as one size does not fit all, and it will come at a cost to someone. The proposed change is simply not a good use of taxpayer or ratepayer funds, and Local Government New Zealand would like to see this provision completely removed from the bill. In summary, the issues I've raised about above risk undermining the intent of the bill, which is better local services. The cumulative impact, particularly the impact on the decision-making authority of elected members, may impact negatively on the integrity of the local government system. Ladies and gentlemen, we have never before brought a significant number of mayors to a select committee to support us at Local Government New Zealand. And the same will happen this afternoon. That is because, particularly the CCO material, is of major concern to us to our ability to act as an independent form of government, supported by our ratepayers, making our own decisions that our ratepayers want, and quite frankly, to bring somebody else in to tell us how we run our services is completely undemocratic.
Local Government New Zealand President Lawrence Yule, whose views on changes regarding council-controlled organisations were echoed by Otago Regional Council Chairman Stephen Woodhead.
Firstly, I want to acknowledge that Otago Regional Council supports the stated aims of the bill to enable improved service delivery and infrastructure provision arrangements for New Zealand's councils to help local authorities to lift performance and respond to the emerging challenges. Also note, and I'll refer back to this in a moment, the inclusion in 2014 of Section 17A into the Local Government Act, and you will be familiar with those provisions, and these reviews that are flowing on from the inclusion of that into the LGA, they're up and underway now across New Zealand, and certainly in Otago. It's another one that has been managed collaboratively across the whole region by all councils. These reviews must consider options for more cost-effective governance, funding, delivery of infrastructure, services or functions, including the outsourcing, corporatising or sharing with other councils. So that, you know, there's already a big block of work underway focusing on efficiencies and looking at all options for service delivery there. I wish to remind you of that. We also, OIC also supports the proposals in this proposed bill that would enable greater flexibility that is not already possible under the existing Act, you know, putting together the CCOs and etc. So I just want to ensure that you understand that we're not against change. Another aspect of the bill that I want to spend a moment on and we are supportive of is the exclusion of both councillors and staff as potential directors of CCOs. And this is something we hold quite dearly to our heart. Otago Regional Council is 100% owner of Port Otago, and we have operated this model where there is no political representation since 1989. We have one of Mr. Bodeker's staff sits as an observer, and we manage that so as to ensure they're not deemed as a director. But we just see it as being best practice. There are a number of examples I could give where these sorts of issues where there are governors involved as directors where there can be conflicts. And examples include discussions around dividends, for example, whether you're sitting at council or if you've got both hats on, resource consent processes. And there's a number of situations where we believe it is far better to be sitting at arm's length. There are sufficient structures and processes available these days to ensure there is still a control required and robust reporting processes without actually having political representation as a director. And it's something we're quite passionate about. We have good working relationships with our port company at chair and chief executive level. And there is 6-monthly and 12-monthly reporting. We appoint the directors, we approve the statement of corporate intent, and they get on with running the business, free of any potential political meddling. Now, I want to be clear that I'm not wanting to insinuate that there are not elected officials on councils that don't have the ability to be directors. The conflict comes when the council itself has a relationship as part of a CCO or the likes. We actually have a councillor who is a director of another council's CCO. He has gone through the normal commercial selection process. That's fine. But where there is a relationship from the council through, we think there are potential issues there, and it's don't believe it's best practice. But I'd have to say that's where our support for the bill more or less ends, and I want to run through some issues with you that we have. We believe that the proposed new powers of the Minister to direct the Commission and the Local Government Commission to determine and conduct reorganisations, establish multiple own CCOs without agreements of councils or their local communities, to not need demonstrable community support, the ability of the Commission to establish committees, joint committees, and the delegations of responsibilities, duties and powers to those committees, we strongly oppose. It is the role of governors of local authorities to determine committee structures, the scope, delegations, responsibilities, etc., and not the role of the Local Government Commission. We actually believe these proposals are potentially inconsistent with the first purpose of the Local Government Act, which is to enable democratic local decision-making and action by and on behalf of communities. Significant inconsistency there in our view. And going back to the Section 17A reviews, from an Otago perspective, we've heard your message. We are partway through working those reviews and the process. I'm sure there will be changes in the way services are delivered as a result of those reviews. But please give us some time to implement those changes that were put in place in 2014. These sorts of decisions, when we're talking around the delivery of services, structure of local government, and for the outcomes to be successful, they need to be driven from the ground up, locally up, not imposed from Wellington down by either the Commission or the Minister of the day.
Later, a submission in support of the bill came from Federated Farmers spokeswoman Katie Milne.
We have submitted from the point of view that local government is in desperate need of improvement. We retain our view that funding reform is the first priority. We pay a very heavy rate burden as farmers. The Federation, however, cautiously supports the provisions of the bill as offering more scope for enhanced and efficient services with adequate checks and balances. Our experience with local government is significant. As a national organisation, we engage with upwards of 65 councils on their annual and long-term financial plans. We have considerable engagement in the area of regulation and have participated in many boundary change and amalgamation proposals. Federated Farmers is a long-term supporter of the concept of councils sharing service provision to achieve cost efficiencies. Our experience suggests that shared services, which are the emphasis of the bill, are gaining momentum. Information about these activities between councils we find is most strongly profiled when amalgamation proposals are at the fore. We think this bill will advance the cause of greater uptake of shared services activity. Overall, the outcomes and impact of this bill are largely theoretical, and we do not see the bill as a threat to local democracy. We rather see the bill as a redevelopment of reorganisation provisions to incorporate new frameworks for shared services and a stronger possibility of robust amalgamation proposals. The bill provides a more significant and central role for the Local Government Commission, and we think with new accountabilities and other checks and balances in the bill, they are appropriate. The bill in the bill are appropriate. And we are very keen on more efficiencies being shown by councils, and as we've said, there are plenty that are doing initiatives and sharing services. And the example, it's like at home where we've got machinery we share between farms, and the more efficient we can be, the money we save, etc.
Federated Farmers spokeswoman Katie Milne. And amongst the various councils and organisations making submissions on the bill was one from a member of the public, Greg Resniaeke.
I suggest to you that all governance in New Zealand is a constitutional matter. It has to be consulted properly with the people of New Zealand. I can't make that point firm enough. If you are the government of New Zealand, you ought to represent the values of New Zealand if this place is a democracy. And what is going on here is that you are screwing the democracy and throwing it away.
Mr. Resniaeke said he had several recommendations for the committee.
The first one is to reinsert into the Local Government Act the four well-beings that you stripped out in that how many reorganisations and rationalisations of the local government legislation back in 2012. It seems to me, from my personal observation, is that it's not about anything specific. You just want to keep everyone dancing and off balance.
Mr. Resniaweki advocated for local decision-making rather than a top-down approach.
Let's keep working with a diversity of different ways of doing things because we can all learn and grow from each other as we collaborate. And collaboration is now the name of the game. And you're not doing it, mate. You're not doing it.
Greg Resniaweki speaking directly to the chairman of the Local Government and Environment Committee, Scott Simpson, who he also criticised for only giving him 5 minutes to speak on the bill.
That's ridiculous, only giving me 5 minutes, mate.
The committee's meetings in Wellington and Christchurch on Thursday for consideration of the Local Government Act 2002 Amendment Bill were the only select committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Reece Lyon and the Local Government Act 2002 Amendment Bill, while giving new powers to the Local Government Commission, also proposes to exempt the Commission from having to release certain information that would otherwise be open to scrutiny under the Official Information Act. A new Section 35A would apply to documents created or received in the course of an investigation, the resolution of a dispute, or the determination of an appeal or objection, allowing them to remain secret until the investigation, resolution, or determination has been completed. Now, a look at the week ahead with the Leader of the House.
Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr. Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, the 7th of September, the Government will look to complete the second readings of the Māori Purposes Bill, the Buildings Pools Amendment Bill and the Statutes Amendment Bill, the first reading of the Enhancing Identity Verification and Border Processes Legislation Bill, and a number of other bills on the order paper.
Mr. Brownlee's business statement, including the advice that the government would be putting the Statutes Amendment Bill, containing a number of amendments to existing legislation, up for debate next week, drew this request from Labor's Grant Robertson.
Speaker, in the interests of cooperation across the House, I seek leave for the Companies Annual Report Notice Requirements Amendment Bill to be included in the Statutes Amendment Bill currently before the House.
Leave is sought for that course of action. Is there any objection?
Yes.
There is.
The Companies Annual Report Notice Requirements Amendment Bill, removing the need for companies to send letters to shareholders advising them of the availability of their annual reports, is a member's bill in the name of National's Matt Ducey. It was drawn from the member's bill ballot on Thursday, quickly becoming the butt of ridicule from the opposition, who labelled it a trifling measure aimed at stacking the ballot and reducing the chances of bills from non-government MPs being drawn. So Grant Robertson had another go.
Mr. Speaker, I seek leave for the Companies Annual Report Notice Requirements Amendment Bill to progress through all stages without debate after oral questions today.
Leave is sought for that course of action. Is there any objection? There is objection.
Order. Point of order.
Point of order, David Seymour.
Mr. Seymour is the ACT member for Epsom, and he had another idea.
It might assist the member who's just resumed his seat to know that I have a supplementary order paper to the Statutes Amendment Bill containing that private member's bill ready to go already.
Order. Order. Thank you. That's not order. That's not a point of order.
But it is an interesting idea, and we'll just have to wait until next week to see how it develops. There's nothing to stop Mr. Seymour moving his amendment when the bill is debated by the House sitting as a committee, but its adoption depends on it receiving unanimous support. A feature of question times in the week before this adjournment was the opposition's attempts to unravel the implications of changes to the education system announced by Education Minister Heke Parata, who faced a series of questions from her Labour shadow, Chris Hipkins.
So what we're looking at, based on a year's worth of consultation with the sector, is how do we redesign the service going forward without compromising the service for those who are currently in it? So there will be a long transition.
Supplementary question, Chris Hipkins.
Is she suggesting that if earlier intervention is in place, students will stop being disabled later on in their schooling?
The Honourable Heke Parata.
No. So ridiculous. No.
Heke Parata faced more questions on Wednesday, this time about her Education Update Amendment Bill, which she described as the biggest update to education in 27 years.
One of the proposals was the establishment of communities of online learning, which will enable online learning in whole or in part as a supplement to classroom learning or a complement to what their schools offer. Digital fluency is the universal language of the 21st century.
Helping Hekia Parata illustrate that point, her Prime Minister, John Key, chimed in with this question.
Is the Minister aware that in Stewart Island, the school there has 28 pupils? Those 28 pupils are all learning Mandarin, the entire school, and they're learning online. And isn't that a great thing, that young kids in Stewart Island are learning Chinese?
Order. Order. The first part of the question is in order. Supplementary question should only have one lectern. The Honourable Hekia Parata.
Mr Speaker, I am aware of that. I'm equally aware that Te Kura Kaupapa Māori o Te Waiū o Ngāti Porou in Ruatoria is teaching physics and chemistry in Te Reo Māori to other parts of the country. And the members of the opposition seem confused about this policy because in my answer, I made it clear that mainstream schools can be incorporated in this policy as providers of online learning.
But Chris Hipkins was not convinced.
Is she seriously suggesting that a primary school child sitting at home in their bedroom in front of a laptop or a tablet is going to get an education at least as good as a child sitting in a classroom surrounded by their peers and with a fully trained and qualified teacher guiding their learning?
The Honourable Hekia Parata.
Mr Speaker, unlike the opposition, I don't propose to prescribe for every child in this country or hypothetically, no I don't, and that's why the bill is full of enabling provisions, because we actually trust New Zealanders to make choices for themselves rather than have them prescribed to them by all-knowing other people.
Education Minister Hekia Parata, not looking at anyone in particular. I'm Tom Fruin, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.